go.
All right, to kick it off hour number two, it is the home team. We're presented by Athens Technical College, your passion, your future elevated.
All right, Bramer, the Great American Race. They got underway at 4 o'clock today, had the rain delay the Daytona 500 yesterday. That always is a killer if you've got the NASCAR race or golf tournament, especially if it's a major, or and this is the Super Bowl of NASCAR here, when you have to have that Monday finish. It's just anticlimactic, and it's a crowd killer.
Yeah, but it is nice and sunny there today, it looks like. Currently, the race is being led by someone named Hamlin.
Denny Hamlin.
Okay. Then a fellow named Truex Jr.
Martin
is second.
Truex, there you go.
All right, there you go. So there's your update on the Del Boca Vista 500.
Our man, Tyler Hill. Let me see who Tyler picked. Tyler, he picked Brad Keselowski.
He's currently in, it appears, eighth place.
All right, he's hanging in. And I'll tell you, there was a stretch there back, with the early to mid-80s. I loved it. I was a big Bobby Allison fan. He drove the Gatorade car. I liked that. And, of course, you had Richard Petty and Earnhardt. And, you know, NASCAR is definitely one of those deals. When you think there was a period there about 15 years ago when Jeff Gordon was great. You had Little Lee. You had Jimmy Johnson. But it's one of those like golf and tennis. It needs to be star-driven.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Johnson, I think, is still...
This is his last year.
Oh, is
Tyler
it?
Tyler told us, yeah.
Okay.
He's about ready
I see
to...
I think I see his name. I see a Johnson. I assume that's Jimmy Johnson.
Well, that'd be a heck of a way
Johnson is a common name. It could
yes,
be anyone
it
else.
Is.
But
to go out and... Well, I'll tell you, for NASCAR fans, too, I mean, those guys run from February to November. That's a long
There's not much of an off-season
no.
yeah, for them.
No, it's a long... So, all right, so I wanted to... The 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. We had a little thing for Emily for her birthday yesterday, so I wasn't really 100% locked in on everything. We had multiple TVs going, but what was your take on the new scoring rule for the All-Star game that they did? Which, and real quick, just to give you the idea, and Brame, correct me if I'm wrong here, let's say the score is, the theory would be if the score is Georgia 100, Florida 90, you stop the game with 4 minutes to go, and you add 8 points to the team that's winning, so it would be the first team to get to 108 would win. But in this case, they did, 24 because of Kobe's jersey?
Yeah.
And that was the entirety of the fourth quarter was playing to whatever plus 24.
Yeah. No, I've loved that format since I discovered it last summer. It's something – I believe it was called the basketball tournament.
Okay.
That ESPN was airing a couple days a week last summer, and I stumbled on it. It's called the Elam format.
Okay.
And it was a tournament of, old college alums that were, a bunch of dudes who went to Syracuse would play a bunch of guys that went to Maryland, and they would stop the game with 4 minutes to go. They would add, I believe it was 8 points to the winning team score, and then the first one to that new target would win. But and I know last night's game, it ended on a free throw. That's how the game ended, but
of course,
which, you know, yeah. But, you know, for the most part, the game's going to end on a game-winning shot, and it takes away the fouling in the end. Now, I turned on the All-Star game last night. On my TV guide said it started at 8. I turned it on at, 8:40. The game had still not started.
Oh, my God.
So I've got shows that come on at 9 on a Sunday. Sunday's a very busy TV night for me.
Always has been a great TV night.
Yeah, I've got The Outsider on HBO. Homeland is back on Showtime. And, of course, there's Curb Your Enthusiasm now on that's back on HBO. So I watched, once the game finally tipped off, I watched a little bit of the first quarter of the All-Star game last night. And, you know, it's being heralded as, one of the best All-Star games ever. And the first quarter that I saw was just a bunch of lobs and alley-oops because no one was playing any defense, just a bunch of wide-open, uncontested threes, and it was just an up-and-down scoring fest. But I did see the fourth quarter today. I watched it, and the guys started to play defense and played hard and at the end of the game. So it was more competitive once they really got dialed in the fourth quarter. And I think it's a great format, and I don't think it would be a terrible idea. And maybe it is a bit too radical to actually implement in non-exhibition games. But I think college basketball is worse than the NBA because the NBA, when those guys are playing back-to-back, they're playing three or four times a week. When the game is over, the game is over. And they're not fouling down eight with seconds to play in the game. The clock ticks and the game is over. But sometimes these college teams, they're down 10, 12 points. And they just will not stop fouling.
Well,
and it just is.
The flow of the game is killed. And how many times, Brian, we say this all the time, and I love basketball. You love basketball. And I spend a great portion of my life around the game. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen it. You know, we'll just talk college here, men's and women's basketball. You could have a great game. The first 38 minutes takes an hour and 20 minutes. And then the last 2 minutes takes 20 to 25 minutes because of the fouls and the timeouts, and it is just a grind. And I am certainly a traditionalist in most cases, but I very rarely does something that is as radical as this would be seem like a good idea. But I would jump in head first here. I'd be all for it. I think it would be a great thing for the game.
Yeah, I think even at the end of a game that's close, that just ends up becoming essentially a free throw shooting contest, even if the game is tight, and there is the strategy of I'm going to foul you, put you on the line, and you know try and get a quick layup, put you back on the line, and just force you to make your free throws. But you know, here's a format that would discourage that because you're going for a target score, so you don't want to put your opponent on the free throw line to shoot free throws, and the game is going to end. Even if it is on a free throw, it's somebody's got to make a game-winning shot to end the game. So
it'd be,
I like it.
It would have to be like tennis, right? The last point would have to be the winner.
Yeah. No, it yes. would. I mean, one way or another, somebody's got to make a shot to win the game. And there might be, you know, I could see where there are issues where, like, if there is a team that's down 20, they tack on eight. Suddenly the team down 20 goes on some run. Then the game ends up lasting, you get to the final, say, 4 minutes in college.
Yeah, it could be longer.
Yeah, the game ends up going longer. But, I mean, sometimes games go to overtime. I don't know. But for the NCAA tournament, that could definitely get things lengthened, especially for that championship game that tips off at like 9:15.
Well, it's like we say so often, and in baseball, when you have the dance, when the catcher goes out, then walks back, then the pitching coach or the skipper comes out, and then the umpire comes out, and then they make the call, then the pitcher warms up, and you know you've got 10 minutes there. Nobody wants to see nothing happening, and there are too many timeouts that the teams have in hoops, and with that and the fouling, because basketball is the only sport where you can intentionally commit a violation and it can help you win the game.
Right.
I mean, I guess in baseball you could say, well, you could intentionally walk somebody. Okay, fair point. But, I mean, to go out there and do something which is, you know, considered a bad thing to foul somebody and it can help you win the game, that's one of the kind of twists there with just the rules of the sport. But, I mean, to me, I like the rule, and I would also go, I think teams ought only get three timeouts and you can only carry two over to the second half. I mean, again, you get the freebies. Another thing that would help, I think the first thing the men need to do is go to the quarters because it's the last part of the game that uses halves because the NBA uses quarters, international uses quarters, NCAA women's uses quarters, and high school uses quarters. The flow of the game is just way better.
Well, yeah, and even I think talking about the flow of the game, what you see does happen with the timeouts at the end of the game is you do have a scenario where, you know, a team is down 10, they hit a layup, they go down eight, boom, timeout. Let's call up some strategy. But in a situation where you're just playing to a target number, the game is probably more often than not, it's just going to keep flowing. Teams are going to keep playing. And maybe when you get to, all right, the game's tied, the next basket wins, you're going to call a timeout and try and draw up a play.
Sure.
But you're not going to, we're down 10, now we're down 8, timeout. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to foul this guy or whatever. But it is just those timeouts, if they still have them in the pocket, they get used then, even when the game is over. And I think that's why college, it'd probably be better off there because the NBA teams don't do that. They're playing a couple nights a week. They might be playing back-to-back when the game is over. You're down 10 with seconds to go. You hit a three to go down seven. the game's over.
They don't even
team
foul.
Inbound, dribble it out.
If they're down four with like 10 or 11, it's like, no.
No, the game's just, over.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the, what this also does is there, you know, maybe if a team does ultimately surrender and you say no more fouls, then the last, you know, 20, 25 seconds of a game is just a guy dribbling.
Right.
So, you know, this cuts that out too. I mean, even if a team is up 10 and they need one more basket, guess what? They still have to hit a shot. They can't just stand there and dribble out the final seconds of a clock. So I like it. And I don't think it'd be terrible to put it in non-exhibition games. But maybe with college basketball, it could be something they, you know, they throw into like the CBI or the NIT or something like that.
No,
but
I
don't
agree.
Yeah, but the quarter system, I don't know what the holdup is with that either. Because like you said, it's the only level of basketball now that does not have quarters. International, the women's game, professional, every
high school.
Yeah, everyone's on quarters except men's college basketball.
And you got the two fewer timeouts, media timeouts, and then also just the flow of it. Now, yesterday, Alabama called a timeout very early in the third quarter, and then you still do have after that first called timeout as a media timeout, so the third quarter's a bad example. But like if somebody gets off to a bad start in the second quarter and you call a timeout a minute into it, boom, there's not another stoppage, there's not another media timeout until halftime.
Yeah.
I mean, you play that 9 minutes, obviously when the game stops, but you don't have the in the quarters they do the timeout at the under five. In the NBA, it's under six. And obviously in men's hoops, we all know it's 16, 12, 8, and 4. So that is if there is an early timeout, oh, okay, all right, we got to go to a timeout. Then we come back and you play it through the rest of the quarter.
Yeah.
So I think it helps the pace along. I like the new rule. And it's not going to be 100% of the time, but just talking about pace of play, because you're right. If something did happen, if we're up 100 to 80 and then all of a sudden the other guy goes on like a 17-4 run, it would make the game longer. But I think in most cases, it would shorten it. And let's just say, I mean, in conference play, for the most part, most games are close and competitive. So, like, I watched a good bit of the South Carolina-Tennessee was a real good game on Saturday. So if that was one where, let's just say, I think South Carolina wound up winning by two.
But they did, yeah.
Yeah, so let's say, all right, South Carolina's up 60-59. Okay, boom, first team to 68 wins.
Yeah.
Although I guess you'd never have overtime again, would you?
No.
Nope.
Yeah.
That'd be unusual.
Yeah, but that would, you know, that would accommodate, too, that a game could go on a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I mean, a game could with overtime. I mean, I don't think we should have overtime anyway. I don't have any problems with ties, so. But well, you're guaranteed to not have a tie here.
I'd be all for it. And I think it's one of those deals, I would bet you within the next year or two, you'll see him at least try it in the NIT. Because the other thing, too, we know what drives everything. And that television, they want that programming to fit into a specific box. And you know, usually for basketball, they want that two-hour window for a game.
Yeah.
So, you know, to have that pace moving along.
I think if you are down big, too, this actually gives you more of a chance to stay in it. If you're down 10 or 12 points at the four-minute mark, like, you're not going to win. But if you're down 10 or 12 points and all of a sudden, well, your opponent's got to get eight more points.
And you got to get 18 more.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's doable.
Sure.
It's more doable than racing a 10 or a 12-point deficit in, like, 4 minutes.
I'll tell you, I loved it, too, that college basketball's gone to the international rule about the offensive rebound. If you get it, the clock resets to 20. That's been awesome.
Yeah.
Talking about just the flow of the game being so much better.
Yeah, no, that's
that was a great rule. Because the first time I saw it was in the 2016 Olympics, and it reset from 24 to 14, and I thought it was great. So in college, it goes from 30 to 20. On the offensive board. I think that is a great rule.
Yeah, I think the NBA now resets it to.
Do they go to 16,
something,
maybe?
Yeah, it's something. It's not quite as low as the international, but they don't reset it to the full 24 either.
Because that's also, you talk about the flow. If, you know, if the team that's winning, say, gets an offensive rebound with a couple of minutes, it's just going to cut down on the fouling some.
Yeah. All right, moving on in today's 5 at 5, Georgia baseball sweeps Richmond for the opening weekend. Jeff, a review of the Dogs, who did have to rally on Friday and Sunday to win. So does the bullpen get the gold star?
Yeah, I think so. Ryan Webb, I believe, was the MVP of the weekend. He really twirled a gem on Friday night. He went 5 scoreless and had 11 strikeouts and just did a phenomenal job. But Richmond's got a solid team. They went 13-8 in the Atlantic 10 last year. They've got a really good coach in Tracy Woodson. So that was a nice win. I think for this Georgia team, I think the Bulldogs have a chance to be very, very good. And in the end, it's all about making the postseason and advancing. But to think that this team, after losing Aaron Shunk, Tony Losey, Zach Kristofak, Tim Elliott, and I'm just talking about his arms, and then you throw in Shunk, great third baseman, great hitter, LJ Talley, John Cable. Georgia lost a lot of juice. I don't know if this team's going to be able to go 21-9 in the SEC again, but I think this team does have the capability when you get to the postseason with Emerson Hancock and Cole Wilcox at the top that would be fully capable of winning a regional and then a super. So will the regular season be as good this year? It would be hard because last year's regular season was incredible.
Well, the road series in the league are pretty
it's brutal.
Pretty brutal.
Well, when you think, now we do have to go to Missouri, and that stadium just it sucks. The press box.
Now it's later in the year, though. Like, you don't have to worry about weather.
No, it just, I hate it's just a hard play. It looks like a high school stadium, and the radio booths look smaller in the front seat.
They're not
of my car.
I thought they had redone it.
No. But then to have to go to A&M, Arkansas, Florida, and Vanderbilt, I mean, that's one where you're like we said the other day. Now, again, the coaches and players aren't thinking. I'd take 4-8 out of those four right now. Win 2 at Missouri, that gets you 6-9. And if you go 10-5 at home, average winning 2 out of 3, that's 16-14. Good chance you're hosting. You probably are hosting, and you're plenty good. I mean, Auburn went 14-16 in the league last year and went to the World Series. So, I mean, if you're around 500, you're going to be good enough to get there.
Weren't they at Tech? Didn't they win their regional at Tech?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was good.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, Mississippi State in 2013 went 15-15 and played for the national title. So, yeah. I mean, it's going to be fun. We've got a really, really good team, and I think we'll put ourselves in a position again. But it was great to get it. I'll tell you, Chris, Saturday was an absolutely gorgeous day. You know, we were mid to low 50s. The sun was out. The crowd was tremendous. And I think through the years, and you certainly think back to the run we had, the 01 through 09, when we went to the four World Series in 01, 04, 06, and 08. Outside of the obvious of football, to me, and I guess it's just because it is a long season, it's a spring, everybody loves baseball, but I think when baseball's winning, the trickle-down effect just with the spirit on campus and through the fan base. I think when baseball's winning, it's second only to football. And I'm including men's basketball in that, and maybe that might just be my take on it because I've been involved with the program for so long. But I just feel when baseball's going good, that outside of football, you get the most enthusiasm from our fan base.
Well, it's outdoors. The weather is
usually good.
It's eventually going to get nicer. I mean, it's supposed to be cold Friday again,
right?
And yesterday's weather kind of stunk too. But once you get out of February and maybe midway through March, weather's going to be good. It's outside, and it's the one sport that really does help you kill time when you are just waiting for over 100 days till kickoff or 99 days till kickoff. But when baseball can go into June, into the postseason, suddenly when the season does end, whenever it is, I mean, the best are when you go to Omaha and it's like July 4th by the time the year's over. But that's really like, man, we've killed a lot of time now waiting for football season.
And I think with the timing of that too, and we got back in 08, I think on like June 26th or 28th, kind of to your point. And it was also, okay, so everybody's gotten their football magazines. You're getting jacked for the games, and you're watching, Georgia play NC State, Georgia versus Tech, Georgia versus Stanford. You're seeing all these huge games, and Georgia versus Miami. And you love baseball, and these are I get it, every game counts, but let's face it, a big league game in June, it's not the end of the world if you lose it. But so you're playing these high-pressure, high-leverage games. Everybody's jacked for football. So it really is, when you make that run, I mean, the timing of it is a perfect storm.
In June, those are do-or-die games.
Yes.
Whereas the Braves in June, if they get swept by the Mets, you know, like that, but it also,
I remember, you'll probably remember this guy. This was back when they were really, this was like 96 or 97, when they're great teams. I remember the Braves had a 12-1 lead over the Cardinals and lost. It was in July. So what? It didn't matter. But like in college, like if you're an Auburn fan and you had a 12-1 lead over Florida and lost it in an SEC game, or if you lost that in a super regional game, it's haunting you the rest of your life.
Yeah, there was one of those years, the Braves started the year, they got swept by the Expos.
Yes.
You know, that was like, so like, it was Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz. It was three went out and just got swept by the Expos, and you know, Atlanta, by the time the year was over, they had won the division again, and were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Jeff, finally, we'll wrap up the 5-5 with a little Major League Baseball. This Astros scandal is really, I think what makes it so fascinating is, because more so than even with steroids, the backlash that Houston is getting from its peers that are not afraid to say these guys are cheaters, they changed guys' careers. Dusty Baker's already saying, look, we got to do something to make sure our guys aren't getting beaned constantly. I'll be fascinated how many of these Astros end up in the All-Star game and are just completely shunned by their teammates in it. That'll be something to look at in July. But Commissioner Rob Manfred, when asked about stripping Houston of a World Series title, said, hey, what do you mean, take that trophy away? It's just a piece of metal.
Yikes.
Jeff, is Rob Manfred somehow already a worse commissioner than Bud Selig was?
Calling the World Series trophy, which is one of the most beautiful trophies in sports.
It's called the Commissioner's Trophy, isn't it?
I think so. That's one of those he'd probably like a do-over. But, yeah, this whole thing's, I mean, to me, the play is, and I mean, I get it with this, it's like we watched them win the thing. So it's hard to say, well, we're stripping you of it. I mean, I think they ought to be revolutionary and do like what you used to see in college football. Say, you're ineligible for the postseason in 2020.
Well, I mean, I think at the very least, some of their players need to sit some games, don't they?
I think Altuve and Bregman should both sit half the year, 81 games.
Yeah, I don't get how the manager got fired. Now, that wasn't – but, hey, baseball had suspended him for a year before the owner came up and just said, well, I'm going to fire you. But baseball had actually suspended Hinch. But none of the players have had any
– don't get it.
Yeah.
It is – you know, we talked about it last week, Bramer, that this is as bad a just blatant cheating thing. And it was because of the electronics and how calculated it was. And like you say, you know, if you talk about football, like when Florida was cheating real bad back in the 80s, it's like, all right, so they were, you're paying guys to get there. It's like, oh, okay, I mean, you know, you still play the games and all, but it influenced games in terms of having good players there, but it wasn't the direct, like, well, we stole your playbook.
Well, and with steroids, like, all right, maybe you'd get stronger, you could hit the ball farther. When you were still able to make contact with it, you didn't know what pitch was coming, and
everybody
would help you recover. Yes. You could recover faster from you're playing a 162 game season. You're working out, and you're not going to be as fatigued.
Sure,
you know. But this is like knowing what's coming. In fact, Alex Wood is one who said it. Like, I'd rather face a guy on steroids than 100%. Someone who knew what pitch I was about to throw.
Good gosh, yeah.
But the commissioner just like, what am I going to do? It's just a piece of metal.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Rob Manfred, new candidate for the jerk store.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like Bud Selig, they added the wild card to the playoff round, which has been good. They did. I mean, I guess interleague play got expanded under his watch.
I don't like that.
You know, but at the end of the day, like right now, we're looking at this. The commissioner calls the trophy a piece of metal. Which I don't actually mind, but it sounds like they're going to get rid of the DH in the National League. by as early as next season. But they've also like kicked around, I mean, this new playoff format, adding more teams and adding and allowing teams to actually choose their opponents as well. So
yeah, we don't need any more teams in the playoffs.
You can pick who you're going to play also.
Do I have to?
Yeah. But, yeah, Rob Manfred.
Jeez.
He might need to be impeached
from
his commissionership.
I mean, this thing is, it's just not, you know, you and I talking about it. I mean, just the surface of this, I feel like the angst and the anger of the American sports fan, this just feels worse than anything I've seen.
Well,
obviously, it's not a crime or something.
I mean, no.
We're talking about like an actual sports,
as far as cheating
sports
goes.
Scandal. It's the worst I've seen.
And just it's really gotten me that the blowback that they've gotten from their peers.
For
who
sure.
Have not been afraid to speak up and speak out about, no, this was bad.
Yeah, I think player suspensions, and I think they should be banned from the postseason for 2020.
But they are going to get beaned this season.
Oh, yeah.
And now, so basically some pitcher is going to bean them and end up being suspended longer than any of the Astros will.
Well, that's where you bring up the...
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you what pitch is coming. Fastball...
On your butt.
Yeah, on your butt.
So that's just where you bring up the guy who's in Double-A who throws 99 but doesn't have the control yet. It's like, oh, brought this Chris Brame. Oh, that's an interesting move. Yeah, he'll be facing one batter today.
That would be the thing, is to start them. That's an odd choice to start today's game.
Big league debut.
Yeah. All right, the 5 at 5 brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems, more than a system,